On today's BizNews briefing, Cyril and John on the National Dialogue. South African agriculture braces for Trump tariffs. Paul Mashatile weighs in on the future of the GNU. And Bloomberg asks whether BRICS will step up as America steps back. It's Monday, the 7th of July. This is your BizNews briefing. Following last week's furore over the National Dialogue, Cyril says the National Dialogue will go ahead without the DA, emphasizing the importance of unity and collaboration during this critical period.
This is precisely walking away from the people of South Africa and defining yourself outside what the people of South Africa are embracing. What is wrong with the dialogue? Nothing is wrong with the dialogue. It's about people getting together. So what I can say is that the National Dialogue will continue without the participation of the Democratic Alliance. And we will probably have a very, very successful dialogue without diversionary inputs or interference from a party that does not have the interests of South Africans at heart.
Meanwhile, DA leader John Steenhuisen offered a blistering response to former President Thabo Mbeki's open letter, criticizing his decision to withdraw from the National Dialogue. Steenhuisen defended the move, outlining the reasons behind it.
It astounds me now when I read Mr. Mbeki's letter to me that I understand now why the DA has been locked out of these negotiations and preparations. It's because this has been an inside closed shop deal with the ANC and with no other party in the government of national unity. We have not had the courtesy even of a letter from the Mbeki Foundation until the one I got yesterday. But clearly there's been a free flow of information, meetings, discussions around budgets, etc., that have not even taken place with members of the government of national unity. The first I found out that there was a 700 million rand price tag on this thing was when I read it in the media. And yet budgets appear to have been discussed in an NEC setting. And I don't think if you're wanting an inclusive dialogue that genuinely takes into account the people of South Africa's views and opinions and is not hijacked as an electoral face-saving mechanism or an attempt to make sure that you are able to recover some support.
South Africa's Deputy President Paul Mashatile has weighed in on the ongoing debates surrounding the country's government of national unity. Amid rising tensions and speculation about the coalition's future, Mashatile emphasized the fragility of the GNU, particularly in light of continued disagreements with the Democratic Alliance. Here's what he had to say in a recent interview on Sizwe Mphofu Welsh's YouTube platform.
There are some, I think, who really amongst them wants to stay in government, to work in government. And I must say, we work very well with most of them in the cabinet. But it does seem like within the DA itself, there are those who are struggling to come out of the opposition party role, which sometimes irritate our supporters as well. ANC leaders, ministers, and MPs gets irritated by this, and they say, like, but, you know, let's let these people go, man. And we say, no, it's okay. We understand these dynamics. With time, they will probably understand that if you are in government, you have to be in government, you have to govern. If you want to be an opposition party, go and be an opposition party. So we're really leaving it to them because we are convinced that the GNU will not collapse because, you know, the DA is pulling out. There are other parties there who have said to us, look, we are ready to work with you, the EFF, MKP as well. So, because right from the beginning, EFF and MKP were not excluded from GNU. There are people who believe that, they were not considered. They did not come in because of their particular issues they had at that time. But they were consulted. And we then said with the president, look, guys, the doors are open.
Meanwhile, DA leader John Steenhuisen in the DA's new podcast launched on their YouTube platform yesterday says it's easy to criticize if you're on the sidelines and not in government itself.
I see there's a lot of talking heads and analysts that are very upset that we didn't just walk away from government in this last week. And, you know, everyone's got an opinion.
Yeah.
But until you're actually in the arena, those opinions are worthless.
Yeah.
You know, so seeing Justice Malala and other nonsense that they're at, you know, it really is frustrating because, A, they don't have a grip. They're not in the actual arena. They don't know the real dynamics here. And the reality is if we walk away from government – we must know there are going to be serious consequences for South Africa because a new government will be formed, excluding the DA, and the various permutations that government could take are disastrous. On the one hand, you could have a government with a very small majority that is essentially unstable because it literally exists from vote to vote to vote to vote in the NNA. Or you could have a government with a majority where the tail that's wagging the dog is MK or the EFF. And we've seen what happens to countries when those policies and principles are applied. Poverty increases, unemployment increases, human misery increases exponentially. Wherever those radical policies that are pronounced by the EFF and MK. And I think a lot of people just think, oh, well, you know, you're chicken because you didn't dump the GNU.
No, that's
I've got three daughters. I don't have a passport for any other country.
So.
I've got to make this country work for me and my family as well. So, yes, I wear a political hat. But I also wear a hat as someone who's actually got to live here. I can't up sticks like some billionaire and go and live somewhere else. Justice Malala sits in California drinking a Sonoma Valley Chardonnay. I've got to make this place work. I don't have the luxury of going to sit in California. And, you know, I'm a South African, and this is the only place I have to stay. And I'm not going to just hand it over to a rabble that are going to then destroy the country and destroy the future of not only my children, but of the children of every other South African.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here. And get to shop more here. And do more here. And enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Every Sunday, Chris Steyn sits down with Neil de Beer, leader of the Independent Democratic Movement. This week, Neil was very clear on how he felt about the government of national unity.
We cannot sit here after a year of this program, GNU, and already come to the point where we're saying every second day divorce. Cry wolf. People are not going to fall for it. And I will reiterate my opinion that GNU either stands holistically and 100%, or the DA leaves and a full-on attack as official opposition then becomes again, and I prefer that.
How much more saber-rattling can the Democratic Alliance actually do?
No, they're running out of swords. I mean, you know, that's why it's called saber-rattling. You need it to rattle. You know, blikit kostin. So I think they're coming to the point now where Fikile, Helen, John, Cyril, who are the basic puppet masters around this, this is becoming stupid and not worth, I think, repetitive. We are just going to repeat ourselves. And yeah, I fear that the elections of the DA, the elections upcoming of the ANC, is going to determine very much so the outcome of 2029. Make no mistake, MK will be the new kid on the block, and we will have to see the dynamics that they're bringing to the table.
As the 9th of July approaches, South African agriculture is bracing for the reintroduction of the Trump tariffs. South Africa is the world's second biggest citrus exporter, and uncertainty remains over whether Trump will ultimately impose a 30% levy or stick to his baseline 10%. Bloomberg's Jennifer Zabasaja visited a producer ramping up shipments before Trump's 90-day postponement of his higher rates expires.
During summer months when oranges in Florida and California aren't in season, the United States imports most of its fruit from Southern Hemisphere producers like Peru and from groves such as this one in South Africa. It's South Africa's biggest agricultural export, with citrus products destined for the U.S. alone accounting for $132 million in 2022.
We are here in Citrusdale, a town in the Western Cape that's home to around 200 farms. It's also the only fruit-producing region in South Africa with direct access to the U.S. market.
Among the region's farmers meeting the strict U.S. regulations for sales is Gerrit van der Merwe. He grows 50 different varieties of fruit spread over 1,000 hectares. From growing, picking, packing, and shipping, his team does it all from this one-stop facility.
For ALG in the Citrusdale Valley, we're very much European base. So Europe is our biggest market, then the US. But the US takes our premium product. So we send our best product to the USA to make sure we get our premium prices.
His oranges, limes, and lemons end up on the shelves of Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, benefiting from a US trade law called AGOA. It provides duty-free access to the U.S. market, access President Trump has threatened to end. As a result, South Africa's agriculture minister has strongly urged farmers to look for new export markets. But that's easier said than done.
Citrusdale has been supplying under AGOA for about 25 years into the USA. So we've built our supply chains, we've built our supermarkets, we've built our importing companies on that side. So we've been trying to hone that market to make sure that we're very, very efficient going into that market. For us, it's very naive to think we can move a market.
Trade was a key issue for President Cyril Ramaphosa during his May visit to President Donald Trump. And while the meeting was tense, ABSA economist Marlene Lowe said she still expects the tariff to return to the original baseline level.
We agree with the 10% dispensation going on beyond the 9th of July. I think given the fact that South Africa submitted a trade proposal after our presidential visit to the US, kind of leaves things open and we don't foresee the 30% being reinstated.
As his produce leaves Cape Town Harbor for the U.S., the next few months will provide valuable insights on whether American consumers can absorb higher costs. For Gerrit, retaining market share despite any new tariffs will be key.
We're hoping that sanitary will prevail and we can stay on the 10%, and at 10% we'll manage. I think it's going to make fruit slightly more expensive in the USA.
And the fruits of Gerrit's labor may profit handsomely, if he turns out to be right.
Donald Trump's America First mantra has created an opening for the BRICS to challenge the US-led world order. But with a lack of shared values and identity, can this group really become a meaningful force? Bloomberg has the story.
BRICS is not a trading bloc or group. It wasn't meant to be one. Each country is dealing with the issue of tariffs individually.
Brazil doesn't really want to pick sides. Brazil wants to have the ability to trade with the US, trade with China, with the European Union, all at the same time.
A variety of tensions between different BRICS members have kept the group from forming a united front. But they have managed it with the New Development Bank, which finances projects across the global south and provides loans with fewer economic and political conditions compared to the World Bank.
It's not focused on advancing Western values and human rights issues in the same way.
Small at the moment, but with potential for growth. So even as the U.S. steps back from its role as a global leader, the disparate nature of the BRICS Plus coalition is its weakness. Although size gives it clout and opportunity, divisions may keep it from bending the global order towards its goals.
I think it's difficult for the BRICS countries to really pursue a joint path on the things that really matter for them collectively, as well as for the world. It's very effective as a symbolic grouping, but how that evolves is probably going to depend to some degree how on all their individual economies do, how they perceive the US is moving economically and politically, and how seriously they themselves want to move on big global issues like climate change, infectious diseases, global trade, and so on.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more context on both the global and local front. Thanks as always for watching.